This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Monday the 5th of February. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Lara Dickinson. On tonight's show, we find out on Friday whether pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, will be subsidised on the pharmaceutical benefits scheme. So we spoke to some men who have started taking one pill a day, which prevents HIV infection. We also head to the Team Melbourne Sports Festival to find out why it is that people are picking inclusive sporting teams to be a part of. Is this a better way to focus on their mental health as well as their physical health? And we hear from Christine Forster and Virginia Flitcroft about love and coming out later in life. They tied the knot last Friday in what was the first high-profile same-sex wedding since marriage equality law was passed in Australian Parliament.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
85% of athletes have witnessed or experienced homophobic, transphobic or biphobic abuse. In 2014, the Out in the Field survey painted a shocking picture of a hostile national sporting environment, with almost half of gay and lesbian respondents reporting that they had been the direct target of verbal threats, bullying, violence, or exclusion from sport. Yet in the last 5 years, we've seen more inclusive sporting teams rise up around the country to create strong, equal, and inclusive environments for everyone to be able to play sport and be part of a team. On the weekend, the Informer's Dean Arcuri went to the Team Melbourne Sports Festival as part of Midsummer to speak to the different sporting groups and players and find out what makes inclusive teams so special for many in our communities.
I'm part of the AFL9's Torpedoes. I wanted to be part of it because I love AFL and I love playing it, and I felt like non-contact sport was the way for me to go.
Have you always been loving sport, or is it something
It's something I've always followed and watched on TV. It's something I gave up when I came out, and then when I moved away from the town I grew up in, I realised there was more sporting clubs and opportunities for me in the CBD, so I started trying to find a team.
Why did you give it up when you came out?
Stigma and shame. With gay being used to demasculise men, I found it challenging to do such a masculine sport and then deal with my sexuality at the same time.
What was it like when you went to your first training?
It was just great to see other gay guys enjoying a sport that I was brought up to believe that gay guys didn't like. When you're growing up, you only see like one sort of gay, and it's sort of like this stereotype, and you look at it and you go, oh my god, I'm not Carson Kressley, what am I gonna do? The pros of being in part of an inclusive team is, you know, yeah, to just talk. You get to talk about gay things, normal things, everyday things, sport. All those things are really fun to talk about.
And you get to feel more accepted?
Oh, absolutely. You absolutely feel more accepted, and everyone's there for you, and there's sort of a kinship.
Oh, when I started, I was with Melbourne Spikers Volleyball Club. And I actually went down there because one of my friends started playing volleyball, so I actually went down just to watch her. But when I got there, it was very inclusive, like, and they offered me to play, let me play on their beginner's court because I wasn't a very good volleyballer, still not a very good volleyballer, if the truth be known. But it was really good because there's actually quite a few women there, and so that was 16 years ago. So
what was it? What is it about being a part of an inclusive team as opposed to another sporting team that made you want to keep being a part of it?
What's fantastic about it is that you can, you know, well, basically you can be yourself. You don't have to think about you know, what you're going to say. You can, because there's such a big social side as well, you can actually be out with your partner. The conversations are different. It's just a more, I think, welcoming and easy environment to be in. Or that's what I found anyway. I particularly noticed it in the last 5 years. I know Team Melbourne have gone from like 10 clubs to 25 clubs. And we've also had quite a range of different sports. It's not just your traditional sports. One, I think social media has played a big part. And I think what we've always discovered is the more inclusive teams that actually go and support other teams as well, which is really, really big in the GBLTIQ community, is that they grow so quickly. So I think sports like roller derby, even, you know, gridiron, the tennis teams and so forth, they've just been exposed to a lot more. And the more exposure that our big clubs give some of the smaller clubs, the quicker they grow. What's been amazing since going around and speaking to a lot of the clubs or knowing a lot of clubs is not just that they're inclusive LGBT community, is the, you know, straight community as well. They've got involved in supporting it as well. The biggest thing I have noticed is the huge growth in our clubs, and that's not just in members, but we haven't, it's almost been like we can't keep up with the amount of clubs wanting to come in. So I actually think it's the work done by our clubs, by our inclusive clubs, actually outside of our community, and I think that exposure has helped grow the inclusive clubs that we have.
What made you want to get involved with the Melbourne Rattlers?
It was a couple of years ago. There's some mates of mine who were interested in this, and I just thought this is going to be an awesome sport that is a bit more flexible than a team sport, because it's an individual sport. You can actually sort of learn and go at your own pace, and if you miss a week, it's not a big deal because you're not missing the goalie or the hooker or someone else. It's your learning development that suffers, but I found it so addictive. So,
what made you want to become a part of an inclusive team instead of just joining a wrestling team?
I wouldn't have a problem playing really any sport. I've been playing sports all the way through my primary school and high school, and a little bit since then. But I just thought this really ticked the boxes of promoting gay sport in an inclusive environment that's really welcoming and really open, and gives us the opportunity to celebrate our whole personality, as opposed to keeping a little bit in the closet. It's a big part of our mission is to make sure that all are welcome. We don't care if you stand or sit in which toilet you want to use. Come along and wrestle. There's two people in the world. There's wrestlers and there's people who haven't wrestled yet.
So how long have you been a part of the Glam Heads?
I've been now for 9 years. So I joined up at Carnival 2010. At the time, I was probably more interested in improving my fitness a bit more, and saw some people that I thought would be a good group to meet and socialise with, and had some mutual interests, and the training sessions worked in with what I was looking for, and just kind of went from there.
Do you think there's something to be said for LGBTIQ people jumping on board with an inclusive team so they can feel more comfortable about what they're being a part of and doing?
I think it's kind of finding who you're comfortable with and finding your own group and finding people of the same interest. So probably in a way, yes, I do think so, yes.
So what's been, what have you loved being a part of with the Glamour Heads for the past 9 years?
The fitness, the swimming, being able to do amazing events, going overseas to big competitions, some of the lifelong friendships I've got from it, just everything the club has to offer, and you kind of, the more you put in, the more you get out of it. It's fantastic.
I'm Rogue, and I'm part of the Kingston City Rollers Roller Derby. I actually have been skating for years and years, since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. My dad was an ice hockey player, and wanted me to go into that, and I broke his heart and went to rollerblading instead, and then I found Kingston and I haven't looked back.
So what made you want to be a part of such an inclusive team?
We've all got the experience in Kingston. We're all a breakaway league. We've started from different leagues and come across and founded our own team because we all had the experience of walking into our home leagues and not being fully accepted. It's very clicky, especially when it started 5 years ago, because as you can imagine, it's a lot of strong personalities against each other. It was very much me for me, but we're trying to change that perceptive. We want everyone who comes to us to feel welcome. You know, we look up, we wave, we smile, we hug. Anyone who comes through the door is here. Your family. You're with us. This is the spiel that we get every time we have rookie intake, because literally you speak to any member that is with us. We've all got that story. XD from Southsea had it. I had it from Rosebud. Bacon's come down from New South Wales. Same sort of thing. We want to play. We want to be part of a team. And here we are.
That was Dean Arcuri reporting from the Team Melbourne Sports Festival on the weekend.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
On Friday, in what was the first high-profile same-sex wedding since marriage equality law passed in Australian Parliament, Christine Forster and Virginia Flitcroft legalised their union in a cocktail party-style wedding in the centre of Sydney, overlooking the harbour and the botanical gardens. They'd been together for 10 years, finding each other later in life, when they were both still married with children. Their relationship thrust them into the public spotlight and, with Christine's brother, former Prime Minister Tony Abbott's objections to same-sex marriage, the two became strong advocates for equal rights. Now on The Informer, we will replay a part of an interview Benjamin Norris had with Christine and Virginia on Word for Word last year, where they talked about their families, coming out, marriage equality and loving one another.
We've got a pretty great life. You know, we've got kids that are happy and balanced and have come through this, you know, with a certain level of resilience that I didn't know that they had within them. And I, you know, Chris and I have a fantastic life, you know. Yes, albeit that we were outed publicly on a four-page spread in the Oz, that was pretty confronting, where you have to go up to your general manager and your colleagues and say, look, you know, my private life is just that, it's my private life. But as of Monday, I'm publicly outed and, you know, there might be press and media involved in this and I just need to let you know this. And I've got to say, in my work situation, nobody blinked an eye.
What changes did you notice within yourselves from being a young person and then to discovering that you're gay? Do you think your sexuality threw you off course in any way?
Me coming out in my later years, I think I just reached a point. Well, firstly, I met Christine. Changed my world for what it was and what it had been previously. But for me, it was probably something. I think nobody could honestly say that they've never, during some point in their life, not been attracted to somebody of the same sex. And so, yeah, maybe we all had it in us when we were younger, but I think for me it was that meeting Christine that changed my world. And I don't think it... I don't know, I can't speak for Christine. What are your thoughts?
When I came out, the major thing that changed for me was that I was able to be authentically me. Now, I know that sounds a bit cliched, but, I mean, I came to the realisation about my sexuality over a long period of years, probably starting in my 30s. But it was really... I mean, when I reflect back on it, on my life now, particularly my younger life, I have spent all of my life falling in love with women, but none of the women that I fell in love with over the course of my life were gay. So those relationships just remained, you know, very... I had very strong connections with them, but they were always platonic relationships because none of those women were lesbians.
I like the fact, though, that, you know, you've stayed true to yourself. Like, you know, yes, people can be impacted by the change, you know, coming out, by the coming out process. That can change people, but you've stayed strong. Well, you've stayed true to yourself.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for me, it was all about being true to myself. You know, I had to come out because, you know, I'd fallen in love with and deeply, passionately in love with Virginia. And that meant that I had to come out, and it also sadly meant that I felt compelled that I had to end my marriage. But it's not so much that we've blazed any trail. It's more that, I suppose...
It was in a public space.
Our experience and, you know, what happened to us hadn't been... That sort of thing hadn't really been publicly aired before, I don't think. You know, here are these two women... You know,
fell in love at the school gate type scenario. Yeah,
Living in the conservative Catholic North Shore. You know, all of a sudden, you know, and me being the, you know, the related to the then very high pro and still very high profile national public figure. I guess it just sort of shone a light on those kinds of situations and the fact that they happen, and they happen in unexpected places.
I'm sure there are still hairdressing salons in St. Ives that are above. Oh my God, Tara, did you hear?
Did you?
About those lesbians at the local school.
I could not have done any of it without Virginia. She is the most amazing political wife anyone could ever wish for. I mean, yes, she ends up handing out how to votes, but that is the very tip of the iceberg, I tell you.
And well, thanks, Ray. But it comes from believing in you. You know, I believe in what you stand for, and I believe in you as an individual. So for me, it's just a natural.
That's an extension for you.
Of course, it is. I see her achievements. I think, wow, you know, what a gal, isn't she great?
When I told Tony that,
in fact, he was the first
Yeah, member of my family.
Member that, Christine.
Yeah. When I told him, from the outset actually, he was, he was shocked, of course. Everybody in my family was shocked. I was shocked myself in many ways. But he was shocked, but he respected that I was had found myself in a very difficult situation, and he respected the fact that I had to make some terrible decisions that would have impacts on many people. And he didn't ever judge me. He was supportive and understanding of the great difficulties that I was going through. And that's all you ask for, really, when you're in a terrible situation, of the people that you love.
Well, he's your big brother.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's what people forget. You know, people see him as a member of our parliament, but in actual fact, he was just Christine's brother.
He was the leader of the opposition at the time.
Yeah, and he was just giving her advice, though, as your brother.
What he did was offer unconditional love and support in whatever decisions I made. So, and as I say, that's all you want from anyone that you love when you're in a terrible personal, dilemma and crisis, which it was. And he was terrific, and he still is to this day. You know, he really, despite all
What people think.
Yeah, what all perceptions, misplaced perceptions about my brother, he really gets people. He understands the sort of human condition, and he has lived a very full life himself in terms of experience, personal experiences and
challenges himself.
Yeah, and so he understands. He has a great deal of empathy, which you don't necessarily see, coming out in the parliament, perhaps. It's not, he doesn't look particularly empathetic, but he really does.
I would love to be a fly on the wall at Christmas dinner or at a Sunday lunch. And what was the debate like on marriage equality for this country?
It was reasonable. It was actually very adult, reasonable. You know, a lot of people see Tony as this whole big no campaign, and how could Christine possibly, sit at the same table with him for... I mean, that's such a juvenile way of dissecting this thing. Tony has his belief system. He doesn't not love Christine or I. He does not love and support our relationship. He has a very different view to marriage, which is absolutely fine.
So do you just agree to disagree? Do you go...
Absolutely.
And how many people in the world always agree with their brothers and sisters?
Is there something that you both feel incredibly proud of?
That we're still together with six children 10 years later?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I feel proud of us as, the fact that we've made it.
Through some pretty tough times with a lot of combinations of difficulties. I mean, you could throw the dice on any given day in our lives and there'd be something that could bring us unstuck, and it doesn't. It just makes us a better, tighter couple, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it hasn't been easy. There's no doubt about it. It's been, the last 10 years have been incredibly difficult at times, but they've also been amazingly wonderful as well. And, the fact that we've made it through those very trying times and challenges and I drag Virginia through the ringer in the sense that, I drag her into public life and ask of her things.
And I'm so shy.
Yes, she's...
What an introvert that boy is. With that natural red hair of hers.
I have to drag her kicking and screaming into the spotlight.
Oh, God, no more champagne, please.
But I do ask her to do things that I know she doesn't want to do and that she wouldn't. She certainly wouldn't choose to do if I wasn't asking her to do it. And yet we've survived and, in fact, I think grown stronger and stronger.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now, we are going to be able to be married, and I'm proud of the very small part that we were able to play in what has been a very long campaign.
That was Benjamin Norris from Word for Word speaking with Christine Forster and Virginia Flintcroft. Christine and Virginia's wedding will feature on Australian Story tonight on the ABC.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, is a drug which, if taken daily, can prevent HIV infection. More than 27,000 Australians are living with HIV, and PrEP is a potential game changer in combating the disease. Marketed under the brand name Truvada by Gilead, PrEP is available in Australia. However, the price can be prohibitive. Last year, the government knocked back a request to have it subsidised under the pharmaceutical benefits scheme, and we'll find out on Friday whether or not a new request to have PrEP subsidised will move forward. Thanks to the PrEP X trial, and through importing PrEP, many Australians have been able to access the drug and take control of their sexual health, as well as play a part in stopping the spread of HIV. The Informer's Dean Arcuri wanted to find out why Australians were accessing PrEP and spoke to some PrEP users about what using PrEP has meant for them. He speaks to Jacob, Josh, Jaden and Mark in this report.
How long have you been taking PrEP?
So I've been on the PrEPX study since it started.
Started at the end of November, so about like 2 or 3 months in. Why did you want to go on the PrEPX study?
I think for me, going on PrEP was a couple of different decisions. One was, I think, just, you know, trying to prevent the spread of HIV and being part of that discourse. The other part of it as well is, you know, it's if something's, you know, available to you that is going to have a broader, wider impact for your community and also the people that you're going to be, you know, possibly having sex with, I think that's, you know, an opportunity that if you have it there, that you take it up.
It was one of the, it was like a peer pressure thing, like my friends were all doing it, so I thought I would do it. And it was also like, I am Pacific ones who want to have sex with me until I went on it, because they have practices, I have practices, and they like that. I wasn't being unsafe about it.
The only side effects that I've had with taking PrEP were just in like the first couple of weeks, where, which I think from my understanding of speaking with my PrEP nurses, are pretty common. So like stomach cramps, a bit of nausea, and that's about it. And they subsided very, very quickly.
What's it been like being on PrEP? Not much different to when I wasn't on PrEP. You just have to remember something else in your day. But besides that, and also like the first few months, I was super drowsy. The first few weeks, sorry, I was really drowsy. I'm having to get over that, but then you might learn to, like, what works for you.
I think when it comes to, like, managing sexual health, I think it's a bit of an interesting one for me. Like, being a trans individual, going on PrEP was, like, a bit of a struggle to sort of, like, convince it, shall we say, to make that happen, because it was so designated for men who have sex with men. But I think also is that, you know, there is some confidence there, I guess, in sort of, like, being a bit more comfortable, you know, having sex with people who are HIV positive and undetectable. Having different kinds of sex with people as well has been really, really interesting to sort of more openly discuss. However, on the flip side, there is a lot of slut-shaming and PrEP slut-shaming, if you will, that has sort of come with it. So, you know, on the whole, it's been a very positive experience, but there have been some interesting parts to navigate within the community itself and the people that I've been interacting with personally.
I feel like it's making me think more about sex and just, like, where you're having it, like, what, under what circumstances you're having it, and just, like, why you're having it. So, although it is, like, a thing to prevent HIV, well, attempt to prevent HIV, it's made at least me think about more about my general sexual habits and stuff like that.
Well, I'm a topfer. Normally, you consider yourself pretty low risk, whereas I didn't think that was a normal strategy. And up until that point, I'd kind of been relying on my personality and appearance for safe sex, because when you don't feel or look good, wistful memories and active imagination are pretty much the safest kind of sex I was having. But as I sort of got a bit more active and was getting on the apps and meeting people, I wanted to make sure I was not only protecting my own health, but protecting those of the people that I was meeting up with. First, I was importing from overseas and just in general trying to look after my sexual health. And then the PrEPX study presented itself as an opportunity, so I went on that. And it's been fantastic to be able to combine it with getting your regular testing as part of the process. So having the 4 tests a year means something to me, because it reminds me to go and do it. We all know we should, we just don't do it. And being on PrEPX, not only are you able to give it back by, you know, providing that information to the study so that they can really have a firm idea of how PrEP is benefiting men who have sex with men, but you can also be put on a really good routine to know you have to go 4 times a year and get your full bloods, get everything done, and then look at your sexual health in a very serious way. Because I know a lot of us just choose not to because we don't want to know.
So how long have you been on PrEP?
18 months. Well, yeah, 18 months or 2 years, but ever since PrEPX started, I've been with the PrEPX program. And I'm very grateful for the VAC for funding it. It makes the whole experience more communicative. I've found that a lot of people are also on PrEP, so people are very keen to talk about getting that information out of the way quite early on in the discussion. So you feel like you've got much higher levels of trust in communicating with people, and then the conversation flows really easy. And I think that it's been very destigmatizing as well from my perspective as a person who doesn't live with HIV. So, you know, that's my perspective. Maybe other people would have a very different point of view. But it seems to me to have really reduced the stigma about sleeping or playing with people that may be living with HIV. And I think that it's given a lot more confidence that this isn't the be-all and end-all of discussions about how we're going to play. The other thing on the side is I'm becoming a donor father, and I'm going through that process at the moment. And I know that it's off-topic and a bit unusual, but going through that process of getting donations and PrEP being a part of that was quite interesting, because none of the doctors had ever dealt with that as part of the sexual health screening. And using men who have sex with men have a really arduous time donating for a woman to conceive. But because I was on PrEP-X, they treated me as in a heterosexual male, which was hilarious, because men who have sex with men tend to have a much more savvy view about how they treat their sexual health than straight men do, because straight men think they're bulletproof. So I was categorised because I was on PrEP as a straight man.
That was Dean Arcuri speaking to Jacob, Jaden and Mark about why they started taking pre-exposure prophylaxis.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you would like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer.joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Lara Dickinson. Coming up next is Outtakes.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.